Thank you for listening to this talk, produced by the Art Gallery of South Australia.
Good afternoon, everyone. Aksagani Atanga Yuandi, we stand on Kaurna land. We honour the Kaurna people of the Adelaide Plains and we pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. What a hot panel have we this afternoon in a reasonably warm room. So wonderful to have you all here. And it's my deep and abiding pleasure to invite artists to the stage. So as you know, we have Christopher Bassey, Ruha Fafita. Clapping each one, I think. Woo! Ruha Fafita, Khalid Sabsabi, and Jasmine Togo Brisby. And Leuli Ishragi to do the moderating. So here are five people whose work I have admired for years, decades in some cases, and what a privilege it is to be able to hear them speak. Thank you so much for supporting us and for the inner sanctum that is with us all. Thank you.
Fatalo fatu ila pe ial malmalu o le afia le nei afiafi malole soifua malole soifua manuia. I recognize and honor Kaurna nation on whose lands we are meeting today and commit to tread lightly until I leave tomorrow morning. My name is Leuli Ishragi. I'm from the Samanantuff and Tautua clans of the Samoan archipelago and live and work in Ganigahaga nation territory, aka Montreal, as curator of Indigenous Arts Local and Global at the Musée des Beaux-Arts de Montréal. It is a wonderful pleasure to be here with these amazing artists. I'm nervous because they're so amazing. We're going to quickly just say a little bit about each other and each person will say something.
That I'll go first. I guess I'd just like to begin by saying how grateful I am to be here, a part of this show, and to be able to share space with such an amazing group of makers and thinkers here on Kaurna land. I'd just like to acknowledge ancestors here. My name's Christopher Bassey. I'm a Miriam and Nyipungathi man. My family's from the Torres Strait. But I'm a painter and I live and work on Yuggera and Turrbal country.
Good afternoon. Also feel very honoured to be in this company today. I'm Ruha Fafita. I work in Brisbane and live in Yugambeh country in Logan. Also work between Aotearoa and Tonga with my family, just acknowledging the presence of my mom and sister here today, also accompanying me in doing this work. And our good friend Shada. And just looking forward to being in conversation.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Peace be to you all. Khalid Sabsabi. I'm also honoured and humbled to be here. And I also would like to extend my deep appreciation and sincere gratitude to the First Nations people of this place. And also welcome you. And my colleagues here this afternoon, and I hope we all get something out of this brief engagement. Thank you.
My name is Jasmine Togo Brisby. I'm also super grateful to be here. It's very special. And I'm fourth generation Australian South Sea Islander. My ancestral islands are Santo and Ambai of Vanuatu. My great-great-grandparents were brought over in 1899 to Sydney. And just really honoured to be here.
Thank you. I'm really linked to all of you, ancestrally and today. Many of our ties crisscross the Great Ocean and the Levant, And I feel like to kind of bring us, even though I'm sure you've all been spending time immersing and being quiet in Inner Sanctum, I thought we might start with your beautiful poem, Chris.
Thank you. This is the first time that I've been able to sort of speak this work, so I'm very grateful to have this space and to be able to share it all with you. This is an accompanying work attached to the poem, attached to the painting upstairs. They're both parallel each other and offer two sides of the one story. Memory of a mangrove. Inhale to empty your lungs of mud and fill them with the tide. A wash of brine to reveal a rib cage, hugging a shore, wrestling an ocean, or holding on for dear life. This body has the memory of a mangrove. The mangrove lives in the in-between and reminds us that the edge is a portal, gripping the land and reaching into the tides between earth and sea, between form and formless. Labyrinthine roots serve as both anchor and conduit of an intimacy known only to the earth's core, a symbiotic embrace of a hand holding time and ancient limbs that cradle a history that connects you to the origins of the world. We can think of a mangrove as bones of a skeleton, as a sprawling nervous system, as a plexus of blood-filled veins, as a vessel for all of life's flow, as a body. When the body becomes a mangrove, we can finally dream of three places, inside, outside, and everything all at once. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm really struck with all of your work, all four of you, in terms of overarching concerns with memory, knowledge, and I see them in what we term in Tongan and in Samoan, va, relational space that connects all objects, all actors, everything is animate. It's the opposite of, or it's, there's no opposites, it's beyond duality. And I really wanted to ask, perhaps starting with you, Chris. Your work tends to focus on sites and objects that connect you to your ancestral lands and peoples. Mm. What is an object, a place, a sound that evokes this the most for you, besides the mangrove or through the mangrove?
I think that the ocean is, I think, a connecting body. For me, it stands in as a relationship to a place. It acknowledges a distance between where I live and where my cultural lands are, but it also connects that distance. So I think about myself when I am with the ocean as sort of transportational, something that can I can be in one place on this continent, in this world. And it could transport me to where I need to be. So I think there is, Torres Strait Islander is saltwater country, and my work is tied and tethered to my matrilineal heritage. And my mother was supposed to be here and join us on this trip. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it. But, you know, her voice and my grandmother's voice is always a part of my work and a part of me. And so it's about, you know, the ocean being a metaphor for relationships and that connectivity. Beautiful. And yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I feel like this poem that you shared as well is like a verbalization of your work. Mm. Obviously, we've worked together in other exhibitions recently. Mm. Mario Morris, Sea of Love at UK Art Museum. Mm. And acknowledge my colleagues here who co-curated it and worked on it, Peter Rake and Justin Flynn particularly. I wanted to ask about image making and working in oils particularly as this, you know, so-called Western medium, but this abiding connection to watery spaces, to intertidal spaces. Mm.
I think I really appreciate being able to talk about my work through painting. I think like it's a medium that resonates with me and my sensibilities. I think working in a very European tradition of oil painting as a way to enter into a dialogue around history and to project parts of myself and speak to, things relating to identity and family and heritage and also things like love and loss and sort of all the things that make me me. I resonate with painting, not just, I often think that, the audience here gets to see the finished product of a work and while it's hung on a gallery wall, but what painting really provides me is a space to think and to, to make a work of such scale is also to spend a lot of time with the work, to spend a lot of time with painting a mangrove and thinking, and it is quite insular. But, I think there's something sacred about that space as well. And so that space is really important. And, I get to... There's also something to do with its performance and tactility of the making. So, like, paint is a visceral experience for me that offers me sensational and sort of bodily responses, the way that a mark is made and a gesture is made and the hand and the performance of being with paint. And so that is part and parcel of that process of making. And then what the outcomes are these sort of projections of thoughts and dreams and spaces of myself and my family. Mm.
Would you like to speak about the works that you're presenting here in the context of other recent bodies of work?
Yeah, certainly. Taking all of that in and thinking about this space that painting provides me, this was an incredible opportunity being a part of this show to extend my practice and to make something of scale. For those of you who have seen the work or who haven't, it's on the second floor as you enter. It's quite a large painting. It's about 3 meters by 4 meters in sort of scale. The human figure is almost my scale. And, I think thinking about how a work like this might have come to me is to sort of think through the way that paintings, like the types of paintings that I look at, the European lineage of paintings that explore the sacred and explore religion and explore sort of like existential questions, and how paintings are these sort of products of that type of exploration. And then for me it was a process of sort of seeing these works and saying, well, if they're offering that, what might I be able to say about me and my place in the world? And so I think it's important to acknowledge that the mangrove for me as a Miriam man on my grandmother's side is an important spiritual motif, a totem of ours. And so in many ways the painting is a painting of myself in a sort of in a theatrical environment and a theatrical version of myself, but in the presence of my grandmother, in the presence of my family, and this gesture of the hand sort of reaching out, almost touching the mangrove is, it's a gesture that exists throughout history as, Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel of the creation of Adam and the moment between the life force, that happening in between. And so that was a gesture and a comment back to that sort of lineage, but taking all of that on and saying something about myself.
Beautiful. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Ruha, I really wanted to ask you about this incredible ngatu we are lucky to be able to witness upstairs. And in the making of this work, you were sharing, we were trying to find some loti earlier. How many people in your family and how many locations and how many weeks you had to be quiet about telling people where you were so that you could make it? If you want to share a bit about the process and all of the people you feel connected to in the making.
I would love to. That's your question. And maybe just to give context to that as well, knowing that the work up there has a name called Rangatu, which represents something that's gone through a very specific process. If anyone travels to Tonga, it's one of the first sounds you'll hear, as I was reminded today in conversation, of the beating of tutu. It's something that's very alive and is participated in by all generations of a family, particularly women. And typically what would happen in the making of a ngatu is that a village, you know, they're divided into family groupings, and the women of those families or those families, they have a set of significant community events that they have to prepare for, whether it's weddings, births, funerals, and they look at the plan for the year and they identify how many works they need collectively to be able to appropriately serve and honour those occasions that are significant to all. And then every week following, they all come together and make one of those works that might go home with one family, but really is a collective collectively owned thing. And when they're painted, they become something sacred. So the meaning of those motifs are chosen, not often by the owner of the work, sometimes by the noble of the village or the church leader. And the arrangement is also dictated often by others. And then they all join in painting, and everyone has a different interpretation of that initial paint pattern that was rubbed onto the surface of the mat, and that will take some time. And so our challenge as a family has been, how do we participate living across different countries? And so this work, the materials for it, we grew about 3 years ago with an auntie back in Tonga. It's been sitting in Auckland for equivalent of that time. It's very connected to previous works that Jose has supported in that kind of family learning. And we... yeah, so it was, we were in, this one was unique because we were testing a new kupesi. And kupesi is like, when you apply it, the word is not painting, it is writing, because it really is accepted as an element of language that has layers of meaning that is shift in terms of its how they're put in relationship with each other. So we were introducing a new one, we were learning about its possibilities, what it could mean for us. And so it was different than maybe your typical, anyone can do it. We just put it on, you know, it was to experiment. And so for this work, the dies were also made by my father in Vava'u a while back, which all have their own kind of independent process that they go through to be produced from mangrove. Many of the most significant ones come from mangrove trees, which is really lovely to identify their earth pigments from volcanic earth, a soot, particular roots that are used. And they're mixed. And then, this was a printing that took four people, myself and my elder sister, who is very much a mentor in the practice, and two very close friends. And then I painted for 6 weeks to kind of figure out what was going on. And as I got a bit clearer on maybe what we could experiment with, others joined. And painted for another 3 weeks, 2 weeks in that process to get it to where it is now. I'm not sure if it's finished, but we'll see, yeah.
Beautiful. Siotofa.
And Malo Alpito, I wanted to ask about the wearing of ngatu and this kind of ceremonial political practices around ngatu, and if it feels finished if you've worn it.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like it feels finished if it's used, and that can look like many things. Wearing it is obviously such an honor to wear a ngatu. In Tonga, where we come from, actually the most worn ones, like if they have holes, they're the most valuable. So our definition of care is very different. You'll see that if someone is coming that you want to honor, you put the ngatu on the ground and they walk over it, or they drive over it in their car. And the most precious one you can put down is an expression of love and support for that person and the work that they do. But to wear it, I think, often is in, like, a wedding means that you go into that space. It's not a relationship you're forming alone, but you're forming it on behalf of your family, of your village. Mm-hmm. And then we start talking. so it's that thing. It kind of represents a lot. And I think to wear it in ceremony or in dance really does have a feeling. And the ceremony of being dressed with it is also something that, you know, it's with particular plants that smell away, or you wear oils that have been scented. And so it's very, a very cared for object in that sense as well, a lot of ritual.
Beautiful. I'm not sure if folks are aware that in some archipelagos, namely Samoa, where I'm from, we don't make Ngatu equivalent Siapo to the same extent. There are very few makers left. Mm. So even just next door, you know, there's this very ancient relationship between Fiji, Tonga, and Samoa. And in Fiji with Masi and in Tonga with Ngatu, these practices are very much alive. And it's so beautiful to see a transnational experience of your work crisscrossing all of the branches of the family here as well. Thank you. But maybe we can move on to Khaled. Would you like to share a bit about your work? It's such a profound body of work upstairs, particularly as you were sharing some of the elements that go into this practice. And if you'd like to share a bit about what you are able to share.
Thank you, Leoli. I mean, it's a really difficult question when... when you pose that sort of question, what would you like to share? I mean, there are so many, it's so loaded, especially when it comes to the sacred and the cultural and the spiritual. So the work itself is called Knowing Beyond, and it's, I'd like to acknowledge Jose de Silva for giving me the opportunity to realize this work for this exhibition. Knowing Beyond is an expansion of a previous work titled 40, which was made, I think, in 2020. Time is irrelevant, really. But that work really was based more in the conceptual. Mm-hmm. This work is based more in the practical. When you come into ideas of symbology and symbolism within the spiritual context, the work for me is beyond the duality. Mm-hmm. So it's moving beyond the idea of duality, which I've sort of been interested in for quite some time. Over the past several years, I've been looking into ideas of where duality intersects, and it's that third space, the undefined yet to be imagined space, and what does that mean? The work from the main ingredient in the work is made out of coffee, different blends and grinds of coffee. The coffee is quite contested material in terms of its history of colonization and displacement and so forth. But its history is also, there's something fantastic about how coffee came to be. And for something that is used, both coffee and smoke are two essential components. And I must acknowledge that my work is guided by tasawwuf, Islamic tasawwuf philosophies and teachings, especially belonging to three orders or paths, the Naqshbandi, the Rifai, and the Qadri Jailani. Those don't mean much to you at the moment, but those of you who would like to look at those, please do. I as an artist, you're a medium, essentially. Mm-hmm. And what you're interested in is opening up conversation, yes, but I see my work as an invitation to other possibilities, other ideas, other ways of being. And knowing beyond deals with those three realms. I mean, we did talk about symbology, and one of every letter, every character has a meaning. And we were talking about it yesterday, about the seven and the eight. And the seven is grounded in the earth, looking into the universe, and the eight, which is the seven and the eight. The eight is the other way around, and when they intersect, becomes this space where the connection is made. So the symbology is important, but I think work allows or gives those possibilities mm-hmm. for those invitations or to happen.
Thank you. I wanted to ask further to this, what is the bodily sense that is the most present in your maybe artistic practice in your day-to-day life to connect with this third space or to approach it?
I think it's a space that you inhabit physically. Mm-hmm. That is the bodily space, and to be aware of that, and to be and to sort of accept that, and understand that position of where you are in relation to what you're making. So the idea of, you know, the creation and the creator is at play within that, and I think that's why arts throughout the ages, to some schools or some. Has always been either dangerous or and spirituality in a sense for me is an institutionalized way to connect with the divine.
Shukran.
Thank you.
I'm really struck by the spectrality across all of your work. The spirituality, of course, which courses through this whole biennial. Beautiful work, Jose. This kind of brings me to asking you, Jasmine, about this huge work. Yeah, having spent time as a 17-year-old in Santo and being born in Yui Nation territory, which I always name in that way, not to name the colonial town that enslaved some of your ancestors, I find it, it's a huge privilege to be here, and I just wanted to know if you... I guess maybe we'll start with much kind of memory and history.
What specifically do you want to know? That's like everything.
Maybe for folks who haven't spent time downstairs to speak about the form of the ship, which is a recurring motif, visual motif, recurring structural violence that Australian South Sea Islanders and other so-called indentured peoples around the world have experienced. When did the ship first come to you in your practice?
It wasn't practice, it was my life. It was being a child and, we find out who we are progressively over time because it is harmful. And now as a mother, I've been a mother for a while, understanding that responsibility and when and how to hand that knowledge on is huge. So the ship, the vessel, we as the vessel as this physical representation of our transportation and transformation has always been in our lives. And if you go to our communities, if you go to Mackay, if you visit one of the cemeteries, you'll see the vessel in the cemetery on our headstones. It's the way where we many nations came together in those holds of those vessels. Yeah. And it's always been acknowledged as that space to us. So since the first ship did that. Yeah. So it was just natural for me to use that as part of my practice, as something that my community would be able to see themselves within, mm. as somebody who's trying to build space for South Sea identity.
Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful. I'm struck also thinking about all of your practice, your work with the Chelsea Sugar Refinery bags to create a bark cloth a number of years ago, and particularly the first project that we worked on together for coconut water with your incredible memorial made of sugar and epoxy. But particularly, I wondered if there's much that you can share about the tam-tam. Because this is a very significant move. There are very few Ni Vanuatu artists and South Sea Islander artists in the contemporary art scene in this country and in Aotearoa and in the wider region. Mm. So we're very privileged to be able to have these sophisticated works from all four of you in this space, charting the mystical and charting waters. You want to speak about tam-tam?
Speak about time.
A bit tam-tam and... I mean, yeah. There's so much around... There's so many things about islands. I think I'm not being very clear, but... we're skirting around the edges of what we're...
go like this. Answer, like, ask me the question like that.
Could you speak about the four tam-tam figures that are in your work downstairs?
Tam-tams. I'm like, time-time? Like, top-top? Like...
Amiatu.
yes, let's talk about tam-tams. I've sat with the notion of this work for many years. I don't take my work lightly. It's probably sometimes a little bit too thought out, but I have to do that because I'm very aware of the responsibility. And I've always wanted to make a work, and I've been touching on making a work for many years, and you'll see it sort of happen throughout my practice around the slave ship illustration, which was produced in Liverpool in the fight for slavery, the abolishment of slavery. And when I look around my house, I look at all of these sort of shrines, if you will, of items as somebody who's Australian South Sea Islander, going back to our ancestral lands and being this cultural tourist, and what we and I take back to our homes in Australia and build them up as this thing, which is, you know, a connection. And learning a bit more about tam-tams and how they're customarily used and the size and the power that they hold. Like, traditionally, they're over 3 metres tall, and they're buried in they're carved out of breadfruit trees, buried in ceremonial grounds and used for many things. But what I was most taken by was that they were used to communicate between the islands and... you know, when the slit of the drum is struck, it's said that the ancestor's voice comes out. And so when looking at ways to insert South Sea history into a global slavery narrative and what form our body would take on, the tam-tam made sense. And then it's, of course, miniatured, it's removed from its original purpose, muted, it's all of these things which talks to our transformation as a people.
Thank you. I want to ask you all if you have questions for each other before I go. Please ask each other some questions.
Too many.
There's so much, the motif repertoires, the drawing on ancestral practices or subterfuge practices to imagine newness, to project into places that we're not currently at, of healing, of wonderment, betterment, and yet you're also situated, so deeply situated and voyaging at the same time. It's not a duality, it's a third, it's the undefined. It's really wonderful to speak with all of you, and I really would like to know if you have questions for each other.
Thank you, Leone. I think, you know, you said something a little while back, I won't say where the context was, but you said something which was really stuck with me. And you said reset is necessary. And that's something really powerful in this time and in this space for all of us. And it's really sat with me for now a couple of weeks. And I hope that others feel that and generally act on it as well.
I guess I might just add that I think this has been such a meaningful conversation for me, just to connect with you all and
likewise.
Yeah, and like I feel like hearing these stories coming from each of you, it's such it's so empowering for me in my own practice as I sort of like traverse or am on that voyage for myself. You know, the way that we each sort of speak about our bodies, but also practice as a conduit for a way of sort of time happening all at once, like sort of like a continuum of an exploration of something that's happening within us all the time. And I guess that's such a comfort, but also an empowering part of hearing your stories in relation to mine. So I just want to thank you all for that.
Thank you.
I really want to ask you about Mataliki and Mo'oi.
Oh, Mo'oi. Love the title.
And in the title and the different kinds of... We were speaking yesterday about the pre-colonial lunar calendar across different archipelagos of the Great Ocean, and one of the meanings of Mataliki is the Pleiades constellation arriving in the center of the sky and the new harvest or the new planting season beginning.
Yes.
Do you want to share a bit about that?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the things in this work are like questions I had that I wanted to learn more about. But this particular, so the title, as we were speaking about this work for what's really another, I guess, foundational thing of the practice is that in context, it sits as a space for the transfer of knowledge and the shaping of relationships, like that beyond anything. And so your role as an artist, the role of an artwork, really sits within that context. And so I'm getting to the point of where that title came from. It wasn't from me. It came out of those conversations. So there were key questions that I was keen to make space for during that time. It was investigating if we make works that are supposed to honor someone as they transition from this life, which is actually a significant, association of the particular pigments in this work. There's a black that really is its highest purpose is to be on a ngatu that is accompanies somebody in that transition. And so to use that material means to think about certain ideas. You have a responsibility to do that through the work. And so the conversations with family in that moment rested in what are the things that a generation before you wants to pass down, you know? And what responsibility do you have? How conscious were they of making decisions that this is something that when we leave, we want you to take on? And it's not just a decision for me to make of what I want to continue. And how long has that been a really conscious effort on the part of how did that shape, your ancestors' patterns of thinking and ways of behaving very purposefully? So those were at the forefront. And I mean, naturally, those conversations emerged At this stage in the practice, most of those conversations happen just directly with my parents. And my dad is a grew up in a farming family, farming pineapples and vanilla in Tonga. And that word for him was a really, I think, something that he felt was a really important framing of life, that it's just the beginning of something. You know, if we think about our life, the goals that we set just being what we want to achieve before we die. But I think in a really big way, he was asking, set goals that go beyond that. You know, whatever that means, we have a family that is blessed by being connected to many different religious views and cultures. And in that moment, he titled the work Koe Matariki Oi Moui, which references this time, but references that moment of kind of something sprouting or germinating, that there's a hidden potential, and that there's a moment of transition and transformation, and that we should see the fruits of our life that go beyond when we're alive. Maybe it's what we pass to the next generation, what we carry with us. So I thought that was a really meaningful way to title the work. And then I asked him what it meant, and he wrote a poem. So you can just find the poem if you want to know what it means, because it's a little bit late.
Where can we find the poem?
Yeah.
It's in the catalogue. I think it's a work in progress, but there's an edition of it there.
I wondered if you all had anything you'd like to share, final thoughts on your incredible works here.
Looking deep into my eyes. It's just really lovely to be able to connect with all three of you, and clearly I've known you for a long time, but like hearing you speak about Chris, about water and your connection, is just like the way that our practice, they all intercept at some, they all connect in these ways. And like I've spent time with you, Khalid, as well, and the way that we kind of have this shared experience of our place in Australia and belonging, and like it's just been really beautiful to feel like we are together in this. It's quite nice.
Thank you.
And you, my sister. I actually want you to talk. I don't know if this is too personal, but you showed me a photograph yesterday.
Too personal.
Okay. I just thought it gave. Is it?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Okay. Of course.
Okay, so now I can talk about it. And it made me really see your practice in. I've always known how deep it is, but like, can you tell them what I'm talking about?
You know, I think we all have these secrets. So if I share this one, I feel like we should all share one. I shared a photo with Jasmine of. So I've been living in Brisbane maybe for, I don't know, 11 years now, based there. But I would go back every uni holidays to make and work and be with family that was based there. Anyway, the photo is of, because we were renting homes, and at that time my sister was in transition, but this is something that at the time I didn't think it was strange, but now coming out of, I think it's a strange thing to share with people.
It's not strange.
Anyway, I'm sleeping in the work, because so it's my mattress, and it's my, someone caught a photo of me just like completely cocooned in the ngatu before it was finished, and I'm just on the floor that way, which is, I feel like, became a thing of like just being with the work in a different way was a really important space, whether it's like someone used it as a mattress before it goes into like a different context, or so that's often where they sit, actually. They're slept on, they're kind of used in many different ways before they become painted and finalized, you know, as a fabric. But yes, it was kind of this, there's a work that now is, it's in a collection, I think, somewhere, but that was previously, I would just use it as my bed for that time.
But it's just so beautiful, because I think so often people see works in the gallery and they see it as a separate thing, but it's such an intimate thing for us, right?
Yeah.
It's part of us to the point where you sleep with it, you know? And I, you would, people would know that.
Yeah.
I'll back you up now. No secrets. No secrets from me.
No, it's like.
And what's your secret?
No, I got nothing. Like, I just think I can't say I sleep. I mean, I sleep in my studio, but like, I can't think that I wrap myself up in an oil painting.
It's very soft.
Nah. So that's beautiful. I mean, like, that sounds like. I mean, that's like explaining how it gets worn. You know, that's what happens to these works. Yeah. And so to sort of like be with them and have a relationship with them, and like, again, it's that thing about the body in relationship to the work, whether you're working on it or sleeping on it or whatever. Like, I mean, my experience with like painting something so large was so like viscerally bodily, like my body transformed. I had to, you know, build a canvas in a room, and that it couldn't fit through the door, and so I was acutely aware of the architecture that I was working within, and I had to buy Bunnings ladders and scaffolds to reach the top, and you know, it was sort of like it really changed and challenged my work. And again, I'm grateful to Jose for sort of challenging me and pushing me and allowing me to sort of access this way of working. I mean, scale is always something that is important, but it certainly my relationship to the work changed, you know, being up with it and being engulfed by it. And I guess I hope that's not really a secret.
You know? No, that's
not, doesn't have that same visceral image of you wrapped up in a work, but it's
nice to imagine that it's like larger than your studio.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it was like people would come in and be like, how did this get in here? and it was like literally like up to the ceiling, and then it had to get like unpicked and unbuilt and then pulled out through the window and then, you know, built again and then shipped down here. And I mean, they're the kinds of things that, I mean, you all don't get to see, but it's all part of how we work and how we have to move in space that work is made as well. Yeah.
Thank you. How many cups of coffee?
Seeker. Well, look, I actually I went through about 20 kilos. So
20 kilos?
20 kilos.
Wow.
And I would say about 15 litres of acrylic, medium gel, to make the work. And most of the time, of course, you would use your hand. But that's more of a process. But the idea is secret, and then there's the private and the public. I mean, someone asked a really important question about the work for me, and it crystallized it for me. And they asked an artist, actually, Lawrence English, I don't know if he's here, but he asked about the sound in the work, and he said, look, it sounds it has a machiney quality, because he works a lot with tones and frequencies, and I don't want to speak on his behalf, but he said that there's something organic about the sound. Can you tell me about the process of sound? So this is a private sort of thing for me. When I make work, those of you who know my practice, sound is the driver to all my work. So the sound is what envisions and guides what and how it manifests in front of you as the object. So the sound itself goes from an analog process to a digitized form, and then it is played back over and over again while I make these objects, while I edit the work. So the raw component of the sound is actually the Madea he'll hear here tomorrow, so it's variations of the Madea, so the Anashid and the chants that you will hear. So I take those and I process them, and I look at, I'm interested in frequencies and ideas of the inner and the outer and the seen and the unheard and those sort of ideas. So that's a bit of a private thing. So there.
So great. I want to ask you now to maybe, that's a beautiful end, a note I think we could end on. If we could give a beautiful round of applause.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Great turnout.